Friends, welcome back to the Film Alchemist Podcast, the show where we take the movies we love, break them apart, piece by piece, in long, agonizing procedural format, to find out what gives them their magic. I'm your host, Josh Griffey, joined as always by my friend, co-host, and guy who only talks to me in parking garages,
Alex Dandino.
That's right. Dramatic little bitch who could have saved the country, like, way faster than he did. Neither here nor there. All right.
Fucking Holbrook.
We are here to talk about... It's Oscar month, man. I love Oscar month. I know not everyone is as big a fan. But hey, man. It's nice to see artists get celebrated. That's all I'm saying. All right. Before today's just stunning, powerful episode that's actually really even scarier in today's modern world. All the President's Men. But before that, a little business. Everyone, we are on Patreon. Patreon.com/FilmAlchemistPod. We are spending the year trying to really grow our community over there. It would mean the world to us if you would be so kind. If you have a little extra that you could help us out and join the cause. We have a huge Patreon exclusive library over there. We give our patrons a lot of authorship to help fill up those episodes with what they want. We do some feature length commentaries. We're about to wrap season 3 of Tales from the Crypt on our Tales from the Crypt miniseries if you want to watch along that with us. Other miniseries coming. We are working exceptionally hard to try to make that worth the time, money, try to make it a fun place where movie-loving people can come together and have some fun. We have a wonderful community now that we would love for you to join. Again, that's patreon.com/FilmAlchemistPod. If you have the ability and would be so kind, we would love you for as long as you're a member of the community, and then we will shut you out like a really devastating breakup. Then we shut it down emotionally because we can't be open to those daggers. We have real lives. Just kidding. We'll love you forever.
Where are you All right. going with this?
I never know. The starts of the show are a real whiteboard scenario. All right. You can also go things you can do to help us that don't cost any money that also are very valuable. You can leave 5-star ratings and reviews wherever you find the pod. Help us defeat the algorithmic government forces that try to hold us down, suppress us, bug our rooms. That is greatly appreciated. Everywhere you find podcasts, do that. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel Film Alchemist so you can see our lovely faces, see other stuff we're working on over there. You can make sure to follow us on all the socials, including now TikTok, where you can see clips of the show and other TikTok-specific content we're making over there. Some fun games we're playing over there. We would appreciate it. Another thing, make sure you're reaching out. Tell friends who love movies what we're doing. That helps us out. Send them an episode. We've got a shitload of episodes. Send them one of a movie they like, and we'll take it from there. Also, we make movies, man. I actually just finished a shoot this weekend for what may be our weirdest movie yet. So if you've ever wanted to see me as a very weird serial killer, go to misfitparade.net. And you can find all the stuff we're working on there. We're getting geared up for festival season, so I may even be coming to a town near you. So misfitparade.net, that would mean the world to us! All right. Alex, I saw your face at the start of the movie when I said painstaking procedural, right? I think you took it as me saying that I thought that was a negative.
Anytime I pick a movie, I assume you're going to find a way to make fun of it at the top. So,
oh, Alex, how dare you?
I know.
See, now I'm going to be like, what was it, Ben Bradley? I'll be like, sack up, find me some hard evidence that that's true. Not either.
That's more of a Marty Balsam thing, but yeah, I get it, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying, newspaper guy shit. I actually think that is the great superpower of this movie.
Me too.
If you're talking about procedural, it's not my favorite genre all the time is the guys just watching guys like do their job. It's not always my favorite thing. I think in this movie, it's one of those screenwriting things they always talk about, right? Obstacles, obstacles, obstacles. The procedural in this movie is this never ending plethora of obstacles for these men. But what I love about this movie, right, is the way these two men, these two nobodies, right now, Woodward especially has become this kind of phenomenon. Everyone knows his name. He's not hungry anymore, right? He's like an established name who did a thing and whatever. But you find these two guys at the bottom, these two hungry reporters who want to have a career. we never quite know if they're doing it for themselves, if they're doing it. Their motives don't matter, right? We know it's not altruistic necessarily. We know it's not even patriotic. But it's these two men fighting not only the politics of the paper, the politics of the country, starting to really, in kind of uncomfortable ways at times, weaponize their personal relationships with people and coworkers to try to find one more thread. And every time in this movie they find a thread, we watch them doggedly attack, right? And I think watching this, them just kind of attack this mountain problem, right? This thing that, like, a stone a time and you can move a mountain is like one of those great sayings, but you're like, no one would do that. In this movie, they do. And the other device they added that I thought was so beautiful, and why I think the kind of painstaking procedural nature of it works really well, I love watching them work in the background as American history moves forward as if things are normal. I just think the staging of this film, the pacing of this film, obviously the acting and the writing are without match. But the guiding hand of this film is so fucking strong. For a movie that at many times could completely lose you in the minutiae of what these men are doing, I think it is one of the most expertly crafted films I've ever watched. It's a beautiful movie. Alex, opening thoughts on All the President's Men.
All the President's Men is one of my favorite films of all time. Like,
it's a stunner.
It's just one of the greatest movies I've ever watched.
Because I don't think I'd seen it since like college, and I don't know that I had appreciated it.
I watch it pretty much every year, pretty routinely. More, I mean, it's just, it has just incredible. Everything is great. Like, the cast is amazing. The editing's incredible. It might have one of the most like stark sound effects of any movie ever, which is the sound of the typewriter hitting a piece of paper.
Yeah, the pen is stronger than the sword kind of thing. They're like, now the fucking pen is a goddamn machine gun.
It's so fucking loud. And just like, you're like, I am watching this movie. I am paying attention. But I think what's most fascinating about this entire thing is that it is a detective story. It is like essentially a noir with the least cool detectives ever. And there's an entire generation of people who got into journalism because they saw this movie. And most of them are people our age. Like, there are people who, like Woodward and Bernstein are people who we know are as famous. But at the time, this was, not only was this like contextually in American history, not only was not only were Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein like not famous people, they were, like beat reporters.
They were scrubs in their own news.
Nobody gave a shit about Watergate. The idea of it being a thing was so inconsequential, and it became such a thing because of these guys. This is an earth-shattering moment in American history because of this.
Oh, my God, yeah. Well, it's one of the things in the movie I was going to ask you about. I think one of the hardest things in the movie, and I am not a history buff, right? Like, I would classify myself as, like, I'm Trivial Pursuit dangerous, right? Like, if you throw out, like, a phrase or an event, I probably know, like, a one sentence, what was it, right?
Right.
I think, as not a history buff, because I was Googling a lot during this, because I was just like, what? I don't know that I appreciated the timeline we were working in this. Mm-hmm. I can tell these guys are working a lot, right? There's a moment when they're going through the name and checking off the names of everyone who worked at wherever the fuck, Creek or whatever, where they mention that they had been on that for a couple weeks and got nothing. I do not know if the movie has a flaw, and it's pretty fucking nitpicky one. The timeline somewhat collapses to where I don't understand, and I think it's an important part of the story, is how hard and how long these guys were attacking this problem.
Yeah.
And how that becomes even more impressive that the newsroom stayed with them. That they stayed with it.
Yeah,
I mean, as to your point, no one gave a fuck. Like, they were burying these stories all the time.
Its place in history is, I mean, not only that, these guys are also, they don't talk about this really, because it seems like these guys are only working on the Watergate story. Mm-hmm. they also had to be reporters for other things. So, like, not only are they dedicating all their time to this, but also having to do their actual job, which is a lot. Chasing just the Watergate story, especially in the beginning when no one gave a shit about what was going on, that was so just, it's crazy. And again, like, look, I don't know if you looked up what they look like in real life, but
oh yeah, that was one of my first Googles.
Hell of a glow up, I'll say that.
Yeah, I mean, going from fucking Bob Woodward to Robert Redford,
pretty good.
I mean, to be fair, any of us getting Robert Redford to play us in a movie would be a glow up. All of our wives would watch that and be like, "Jesus Christ!"
I mean, Dustin Hoffman is.
By the way, you want to know something wild? Yeah, Dustin Hoffman's like, if you were like the nerdy sidekick guy, he's like the hot version of that.
Yeah.
My wife has come out and was just like shitting on Robert Redford's attractive resume. She's like, people thought Robert Redford was attractive. And I was like, how fucking dare you? Fight I was like, there are entire generations of people who recognize he was proto Brad Pitt. Like, what are you talking about? As you can see, if you're on YouTube, you can see what my wife gravitates towards. I am the anti-Robert Redford.
She's more.
My wife's into more of a inflated Weird Al kind of a vibe.
You're sort of. Well, I mean, like you're a very good-looking dude. You know, I mean.
Oh, dang.
I mean, if she doesn't find Robert Redford attractive, I'm assuming she's more of a Donald Segretti type. I guess. Good for her.
Oh my God, that is the nerdiest burn I've ever suffered in my life. Segretti, how dare you? No.
More. Well, that's not a burn on you. That's a burn on her.
That's more of a throwing it at Amy's face.
She got the glow up with you, Shamey. I'm coming after you for sure.
I could not accept her audacity to talk shit on Robert Redford. Is just a beautiful man.
So fucking handsome. It's crazy.
He's so handsome. He's so handsome. He has great posture. Like, he's always, even when he's sitting down, he's just like very bolt
upright.
There's
a scene, it's early in the movie, there's a scene where it's actually when he's walking up the steps to the courthouse to go in to like listen to the Watergate burglars. And his like, just gait is so, I'm like,
big
God
dick
damn
energy.
It, what a fucking
big
movie
Big dick
star.
Energy, yeah. That's a man who's been beautiful his whole life and has never known like a heart. Like, he walks into every room and he's just like, yeah, of course everyone here will mouth me.
Obviously, I'm incredibly
What's the problem?
Hot.
Now let's get to work. Yeah, well, one of the hardest things in the movie to suffer is he lives in this, like, schlubby apartment. And you're like, a guy like that does not live in these. He's got, like, concubines everywhere, dude. There's no way he's bringing them back to this, like, rat hole apartment. Like, the scene when he wakes up and he's just opening, like, a Little Debbie's to have a Twinkie for breakfast is like, really?
Really, dude.
This is what Twinkies for breakfast looks like. You're looking at it right. We are the face of Twinkies for breakfast, motherfucker.
You're a dry toast and grapefruit guy. Don't even start. Come on.
Yeah,
you're not
you only
me.
Eat fucking pussy and cigarettes for breakfast. Let's not be coy. Neither here nor there. I don't know why we did that, but I wanted to defend Robert Redford against my wife. Not that he needs it.
One of my favorite scenes in the movie is when they get in the elevator and Bernstein lights up and he turns and goes, "Is there any place you don't smoke?"
Yeah. See, that no was response. I'm like, I'm a Bernstein. Yeah. I'm a fucking Bernstein.
No response.
Right?
No response.
Yeah, I'm not a Woodward. That's not it. Yeah, cynical, snarky guy who doesn't want to do more reporting and just wants to start throwing bombs and ripping cigs. That's my lot in life.
It's
neither here nor there. Back to what we're talking about.
Those two together are so good. Like, I think the movie.
Oh, okay, this is the problem. There are so many good scenes. We got to kind of stay. But I will stop this here because you brought up their chemistry. The scene of them kind of first, like where they're like meet cute essentially.
The back
where Robert Redford's like looking around the pillar is, you know, Bernstein's taking his paper, and their like moment, it's shot wonderfully, right? But on a screenwriting level, right? This, like, you know, everyone knows one of the Vogue screenwriting books that screenwriters have now turned violently against is Saves the Cat, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love this moment where he goes over and Bernstein's ready for the fight, and he's just like, "Hey, man, if I wrote it better, like you're new here, you're green. You got to do this." And he's like, "Read both. If you think yours is better, do it. I'm sorry." And when Woodward reads it, he goes, "No, you're right." And you watch Bernstein's face. And then he goes, "I don't have a problem with what you did. I have a problem with how you do it. If you're going to fucking do it right." I was like, that is the best introduction to two characters that are now Absolutely. Going to be a unit. I've seen in forever. It's so pitch perfect. And they
Learn nothing.
And a lot of that is just them off each other, right?
Yeah. You could learn nothing about those characters for the rest of the movie, and you know everything you need to know about them in 2 minutes.
You know their idiosyncrasies. You know where they start their like baseline of operations. You know how they see that they can help each other. It's, I mean, this movie is littered with stuff like that, but that one scene is such an innocuous scene, I feel like.
It's perfect.
It's great. All the actors in this movie should have won all the trophies. But I want to get back to the start of this. We're talking about the lack, how Watergate should have been a nothing story. Should have been a blip.
Yes.
And corrupt politics should have kept rolling on the way they always do. The fact that Nixon probably didn't even have to do this, right? It's kind of a self-made, it's like putting your own dick in a bear trap.
It's a real self-burn. Like
it is. And at one point, Deep Throat even says it. He just flat out says, like, you have to demystify the White House. He's like, the truth of the matter is they're not very bright and things got out of control. And that's what we see. The scary part of that is you still see the machinations of the government can just fucking steamroll through that.
Yeah.
So one of the things I loved is I had not really, I guess, held on to that opening at the Watergate where they show us what happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's so small. It's so pathetic.
It's really
it's
dumb.
It's so innocuous.
It's a dumb
that you're like,
crime.
This little, like, five doofuses hiding under a desk together, like, ugh.
Yeah.
That is a moment that toppled an American president.
It's pretty fascinating.
It's so small. And in that moment, if Woodward hadn't gone down there and been like, hey, man, how did these burglars who didn't have access to counsel, how did they get this really swanky lawyer? You see him starting to like kind of chase this guy down in the courtroom. And he's like, so they had they got given counsel, right? He met those two guys.
Right.
He goes, well, how did you get here? If not for that one moment and it sticking in Woodward's crawl, him saying it and then it sticking in Bernstein's crawl, none of us have ever heard of Watergate.
No, no. Well,
maybe it's a thing that like Woodward, now someone like Rachel Maddow would do like a really long podcast deep dive. Look at this, like how she did on Spiro Agnew, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nixon's vice president, who's shown in the movie.
Yep.
It's one of those things where it's like, it would have just been a nothing. And maybe Nixon wins again, maybe he doesn't. And it'd just be like, well, this is, you know, backroom dealings and cigar meetings. And the fact that this little pathetic moment, that didn't even need to happen, right, was latched onto by these guys, right? That the right guys at the right time that were so fucking hungry. And again, I don't think the movie's telling us they were hungry for justice or they weren't hungry for truth save politics. I think what they were hungry to do was to prove themselves.
Well, I think it's one and the same. Like, to me, what the movie does so well is what I like the most is this isn't about the pursuit of justice. Like, that I think is a really key component. And what makes All the President's Men so fascinating is like,
do you feel like by the end of the movie, they're starting to kind of buy into it? And they're starting to drape themselves in, like, we're helping America?
No, because, I think that the integrity of journalism and, like, what freedom of the press can accomplish is really, like, the point of the movie.
The Fourth Estate, yeah.
Yeah, less than it being about, like, oh, you know, what this was so wrong on so many levels, and I'm so glad somebody caught him. Like, excuse me, the cops were not involved in this at all. Until the FBI was
The people investigating were suppressed, right? Like, and just said, don't look the other way.
Well, like the FBI literally, and the guy who plays the Bernstein's contact in the FBI is literally like, listen, I got to tell you, your guys' reporting is terrifying all of us because A, it's everything we're finding, and also a lot of stuff we're not. Mm-hmm. Like, that should tell you pretty much everything you need to know about how, like, this not only like the state of how the government was run in the 70s was, but also the very nature of the Washington Post's reporting and like how like just a dog after a bone Woodward and Bernstein were trying to get this information and trying to get it to the public.
Well, also you start to realize how hard it was to find facts and transmit them to people is not the world we live in now.
No.
Also, you get the sense of if this little fucking thing happened and brought all these people down, right? Because these two men were so unflinching, And I'm sure history buffs are like screaming right now, like, there's fucking 500 of these. Yeah, I'm sure there are. I'm sure there's countless others that we've just never heard of.
I'm sure.
I'm not one of those people that is so draped in a love for America that I want to pretend that we don't do shady shit all the fucking time. I think of it very much like if you're in a homeowners association, the people that want to run that thing is because they got personal access to grind or things they want. I'm assuming if you're such a fucking cock, they're like, I need to be the president. I'm better than everyone. And I want to tell everyone what to do. I don't really believe this myth of like presidents or like a Mr. Smith goes to Washington and they're like, I'm here to help the people. I think they're people of self-importance. I think they want to be remembered by history. They want to be great men. And I don't think that, I think if you look at most of those kind of people, there's not a lot of altruism or their Venn diagram doesn't overlap with like, I really care a lot about people. So
I think people who
I assume they're all fucking doing this shit.
People who are willing to be politicians are, and look, there are some politicians that I've liked. There's other, and I'm not saying that, I'm not saying everybody is an unaltruistic piece of shit. What I'm saying is that you have to have a certain level of narcissism to think that you can help the government or you can help the people. And that's just, you know, you can't be a politician without that level of narcissism.
You can't make deals. You can't be a politician who doesn't bend a little bit on what you believe is right. Like it's all a numbers game, right? It's like, I give this and I'll get, and that by its nature, I just don't think you can be a politician who's at the national stage, right? Like Congress or higher.
For sure.
Definitely not a president who is not somewhat compromised. There are politicians I've loved, like I've really supported. There are presidents I've really loved and supported. Maybe only one in my adult life, right? We've kind of had a shit run here. One president I really, really loved.
Yeah.
If it came out that they were doing wild shit, that wouldn't shock me at all. What I want from my president is make me feel like America's not Idiocracy. Like, make me feel like, all right, that guy's pretty cool and smart. Like, it's fine that he's... Anyway, we're not here to do all the politics. But I think what you see in this movie is that even people who are right-minded or are lying to themselves about the good they can do, you see this slow-moving maw of the machine.
Yeah.
And that once you get in, like these FBI agents probably didn't get in like a politician and they're like, I'm going to help fucking slam doors so that the president can fucking cheat an election. But you get in and your boss all of a sudden saying, hey, don't ask about Halbach because he's really powerful.
Yeah.
All right. We'll try to find, you know, like there's just all these like death by a thousand cuts in this movie. And it's watching Woodward and Bernstein turn that on the system by finding these, like, for example, like a really, like one of the scenes that breaks the movie, right? Is when Bernstein goes down to Florida, right? He goes to Miami. And he really is fucking running game. He won't leave. He's fucking ripping three packs of cigs. He fakes the lady out and he runs into Ned Beatty's office and he starts laying into him with the fear of, I'm going to print a story with your name in it. Give me your shit. If he doesn't find that check from that one donor and then Bernstein doesn't track him down and get him on the phone where he's like, oh, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, fuck. That's it. There's like 50 times where this pursuit should have died in the crib. Which brings me to another point. Should we all think Deep Throat is cooler? Does that guy fucking suck the most? Is Deep Throat just a huge fucking coward and pussy?
So it's funny you bring that up. So like historically.
Because he was like the number two guy in the FBI, I think I read at one point. I read that Nora Ephron is the one that like exposed him. Is that true? Wasn't she, like, got obsessed with it, and she correctly guessed who it was, and then they came out later and confirmed it? Nora Ephron. So she needs to be the third head of the snake. Woodward, Bernstein, Ephron.
So this is the entertaining, like, movie-making part of the thing. So Robert Redford reads All the President's Men while he's on the press tour for The Candidate, buys the rights from Woodward and Bernstein for $450,000. Hires William Goldman to write the script. William Goldman turns in a script, and famously Robert Redford's like, it's not there. And William Goldman's like, well, what do you want me to do? So he starts like trying to start doing rewrites. Meanwhile, Carl Bernstein is dating Nora Ephron at the time. So she's plugged into the DC politics game anyways.
Wait, Bernstein is?
Yes. Carl Bernstein and Nora Ephron were dating at the time. And
what?
Yeah. Took a crack at writing the screenplay for this.
I guess I thought Nora Ephron was like 30 years younger than she is.
No, Nora Ephron is an older lady.
Okay.
But so her and Bernstein, this is how she gets plugged into this whole story, though. It's like her and Bernstein on the side start writing their own version of the screenplay. And
that's a very Bernstein thing to do. That makes perfect sense.
And so it gets turned into Goldman. And Goldman's like, dude, this is like not cool. Like told Robert Redford, like, bro, I'm William Goldman. Are you seriously like letting your boy and his girlfriend write a script about this thing? So he lays it out. He's like, yeah, it's pretty sophomoric and really stupid. And famously is quoted saying in their version of the movie, Carl Bernstein is sure catnip for the ladies. I'll say that.
I kind of love it. I kind of love it.
I do too.
Power move.
However, and it's funny you bring up that scene with Ned Beatty, the one scene from their version of the script that lasts through the entire run is that scene. That scene was written for the movie, in their version of the script, and it got integrated into Goldman's script. But
interesting.
Again, yeah, no, so Nora Ephron famously did, like, correctly guess on her own who it probably was. But Mark Felt, I think, is probably an American hero because he eventually came forward. I don't know, again, I'm not politically savvy enough, but I do think he waited a very long time. Like,
I'm just like, hey, maybe if you're already, like, meeting me in a garage and making me plant Capture the Flags in my fucking shrubs, maybe to you, you know it's important, right? So maybe if you just want someone to smoke cigarettes and practice your one-man show with, miss me. Maybe when I'm like, hey, is the American president doing unlimited amounts of corruption? And you specifically said, let me check my notes. They're not very bright. And it's gotten out of control.
Yeah.
Maybe if you're willing to meet me in a garage, give me better shit to track down. Give me the fucking information. Maybe tell me at the start, hey, here's the five guys that ran the slush fund. Now you go fucking get the evidence to back it up. Hey, maybe if you have the evidence, hand that over. I'm a journalist. I'll write the fucking story. And maybe do that before Richard Nixon gets back in office. And we can't get him out. Because at one point when this broke, he's like, I'm not resigning. Yeah. I'm not leaving.
Oh, no. This was
right.
Like,
he was going to wait it out. You could have let him get back in. Then because you wanted to slow play it, you know, because that's when you smoke your Newports. You let Nixon get back in office. And he's like, he feels pressured and threatened. And he does something fucking wild. So he's not removed from office.
It took almost, I think if I remember correctly, it took Coulson getting indicted for him to finally be like, I probably am not going to get out of this one, am I? And they're like, yeah, you're going to resign.
Again, and I'm not a history buff, but it seems to me from what I've learned is that there was kind of a handshake agreement that Nixon leaves and Ford would pardon him. Like, hey, man, just go away. No crimes are coming your way. Just go fucking retire. If I remember that part of the story wrong, c'est la vie. We're talking about a movie. But what I feel like, and again, maybe it's different because of today, we have a real fear that, and again, because we kind of are doing this like in the primaries and then to election, which this year would be about a year's time span, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So maybe let them know a little, or like once they post the first story and you're like, oh, these guys aren't going to quit. They're down with it.
Yeah. Well,
then you can fucking spill the beans instead of it being too late. Now we live in a world, and it's so different to watch this movie today because now we have unlimited access to information. We can get it out to people insanely fast. Like this would be a social media story now.
Yeah.
Right. The other strange thing about today, right, where you start to wonder if like, a deep throat would even exist in today's, like, now politicians are just doing the scandals in public. They're just unabashedly not doing their jobs in public.
I think the closest thing you could say is like whatever, like the not the predecessor, but like what came after this is actually a documentary series that just came out on Netflix, which is really interesting, called The Octopus Murders.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
So it's sort of the same thing. Like, again, it's this vast government conspiracy trying to cover itself up. Like, it's the, you know, it's the snake eating its tail in this weird way of like, I'm trying to like avoid detection by, you know.
Right.
Like, this is exactly why the Watergate burglars were such, like, the four guys were patsies. And then you have McCord, who's an ex-CIA guy. And again, that's like the thing.
And
that,
a novelist. He was like the government's L. Ron Hubbard. But no, like, I was raised on X-Files, so I'm super into dark government conspiracy shit and not trusting the government.
Well, and I think that's what's so great about.
It's like, this movie's a great, like, watching how many fucking people had a finger in this thing. And it's one of those, like, I still have friends that are like, even my own brother, who in their hearts they believe, because they've watched some YouTube videos, that 9/11 was an inside job. To the point where I remember one of the theories they told me is that they took one of the flights, one of the ones that hit the Pentagon or the World Trade. I can't remember exactly. So conspiracy theorists, don't fucking get mad at me. I'm paraphrasing. They flew the fucking 747 out, landed it on a fucking carrier in the ocean, pulled all the bodies off, you know, killed them and fucking threw them in the ocean. Repacked it with explosives and then fucking flew it into the World Trade Center, essentially. And in my brain, I just, it's the thing I always come back to with conspiracies, right? And you see it in this movie. If you fucking took a plane and landed it on a carrier, took all those people off, reloaded it with explosives and flew it back, George W. Bush is not doing all that work. How many fucking people do you think would have seen something? It's impossible that no one has come out and said, hey, I want some clout to sell a book, right? Like, the military is not paying me enough. I'm going to write a book about the murder of 200 passengers and the packing. Like, it's fucking stupid. All conspiracies kind of fall apart. Like, flat earth is the same way. It's like, you're telling me how many people would have to know that the earth is flat and run the fucking Godzilla-like defense system to turn us back when we're about to see it? And no one? Every single person's kept their fucking mouth shut. None of them have, like, a Friday night drinking problem. They're on Touch Tunes and Creed comes on singing the song What If, and they're like, you want to know a what if? What if 9/11 was an inside? Like, this is where conspiracies die to me. There's just no way to keep people quiet. Well, you see it in this movie. Just because a reporter was banging one of the dudes involved, they just went over to her desk and they're like, hey, can you maybe call him and sleep with him again to get us a list? Within 30 seconds of movie time, that fucking list is on his desk. That's all it takes. One side piece away from destroying the American government.
Again, it's hard. It's really hard to, especially now, because we're so far removed from a time when, like, computers were new. Like, the idea that you would have information at your fingertips is just shocking. This movie was made in 1976, but, like, all this happened in 72. So, mm-hmm. That is so, like, foreign and space-agey at this time. So this, like, beat the pavement thing that these guys are having to do the whole time, that is the expectation. And I think that's where, like, the
staggering.
I think that's where the great, like, detective vibe and the great that really great pulse and energy for the movie comes from is just, like, and again, in the hands of lesser actors and the hands of a lesser writer. And, you know, and then, you know, Alan Pakula is just, like, making this incredible movie in the hands of lesser people. This is the most boring fucking movie of all time. Like, that's why I said at the top, it's like,
not to be mean,
story.
It's Spotlight.
Well,
Spotlight in the hand of
tries.
Lesser filmmakers, it's Spotlight,
and Spotlight tries very hard. But again, there's, like, a whole other Spotlight is a whole other problem, which I'm not going to get into on this one, but, like, this is a pressure cooker thing, because not only are you up against the government, you're also up against a group of people who are up against Ben Bradley, who is for anybody who,
by the way, my favorite character in the movie,
Jason Robards rightfully won an Oscar for this, and he is the Jason Robards is one of the greatest actors to ever exist. And this is the part that, like, if there's ever a movie people remember from, I know he's got a lot of great roles. This is the movie I always think about him from. He is so good.
And again, with Hoffman and Redford just crushing it, he's kind of this monolith in the center of the movie.
You'd think there would not be any room for another great performance. He just takes it and runs with it. It's
like
an
every one of those news guys is so fucking authentic. But what I love about him is he starts off as this almost like you're worried he's going to be this like secondary fist of the government.
Yeah.
Which is like, we can't go after these guys. And he starts off with this very hard. Who the fuck are these guys? What is this? I mean, like, yeah, he meets Deep Throat in a garage. He's like, what kind of freak
what
story
kind of
is this?
What kind of fucking cockamamie story is this?
Yeah, and he's just, but what he keeps saying is he keeps coming back to prove it.
Yeah.
Prove it. He turns it into a meritocracy. Like, if you've got the goods, I have enough gumption to stay with you. And we watch him start to have this, the man at the top now who's not reporting, he's forgot the hunger, he forgot the why you chase something with this kind of fanatical pursuit. You see it click back into his mind. He's transported to those days when he was doggedly pursuing truth, just being right. He sees it in these guys, and you watch him start to appreciate where they were. In the scene when he even says, you know, run that baby. He tells him how, you know, he is the guy they blame J. Edgar Hoover on. He says, run that baby, right? And as he leaves, he does like one of, you know, like the double snap, clap his hands together. There, in that moment, he is full of childlike joy.
Yeah.
Right? He's, as he remembers what this game is about. And you see in him how rarely what they're doing truly matters or makes a difference. And I love watching him go from like he'll be Nixon's avatar to this real, like, if he didn't have the balls, especially when they missed.
Yeah.
That's what the Stain? Final layer, right? They needed someone who had the strength to be their shield. Yeah. And watching him do that through this movie and the subtle way he adjusts how he interacts with them. Like, at the end when he just goes, here's my non-denial denial, and he wrote, we stand by. Ugh! I was like, fucking. Yeah, I fucking love him in this movie.
It's that scene, like, I mean, he has so many great, like, moments in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think the other thing, too, is, like, you watch a movie like The Post, which is Steven Spielberg. Like, it's, and you're watching Tom Hanks do Ben Bradley, and you're like, oh, tough, tall order, man. Like, it's just not going to touch.
It's just not the same.
It's just not there. But, like, for me, the scene that I'm always like, God, dude, Jason Robards just, like, makes everything sound awesome is when they like bring him outside, when they're like, hey, we can't be inside. Like we're being wiretapped. So let's talk outside. And he gives that little speech. He's like, you know, the only thing riding on this is the First Amendment and all this other stuff. He's like,
yeah, the First Amendment, the freedom of the press, the entire country. And he goes, but that doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter.
But if you guys fuck up again, I'm going to be
real mad. That's what it is. Again, that's what it is. Cause he says it suddenly, but if you guys fuck up again, I'm going to get mad.
Yeah. None of that other shit matters. I'm going to be really like, mad.
It is just, you're like, fuck, dude. He is bringing this movie home single-handedly. Like, it's this perfect handoff because that's, like, pretty much the movie kind of ends after that. Is like the
I had forgotten that this movie just fucking straight up ends.
I mean,
them still in the midst of the pursuit. And actually, it's kind of a brilliant choice.
It's a great ending.
How do you fucking wrap this up, right, without getting into Frost Nixon and all this other shit? It's kind of, but again, it ends exactly where it should, which is these two men with unwavering commitment and focus. As you see Nixon accepting the presidency, he may have won for now.
Yeah.
But they refuse to let him get away with it and win in the end. It's, and then they just start doing the, bah, 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 like the fucking bullet points of all the people and the dominoes fall. It's fun. And again, this is a movie where, so let's see.
This came
Jason
out.
Jason Robards won Best Supporting Actor.
Yep.
Goldman won Best Adapted Screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
We won Best Production Design, Best Sound Mixing, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actress for Jane Alexander, Best Film Editing. This movie won a lot of fucking awards. I still think he's my favorite part. I mean, and it's hard to say that, like, the beautiful production design and the pacing and all that. Like, acting is one of those weird arts, right? And I'm doing a little bit more of it. I'm kind of back into the game now. You forget how at the whims actors are to everyone else on the set.
He's just...
And how you're doing shit, and if they don't have a perfect ability to convey what you're doing, it doesn't matter how good you are. So, yeah. I'm not trying to take away from everyone else, but he... I mean, I was like, I was getting a little teared up watching him. I was like, what a fuck. It, like, that's one, like, of those, like, you just hope you can do one thing that good.
It's interesting, too, because the movie itself is not this, like, mouthpiece for patriotism, but it is this weird sort of, like, oh, fuck, man. Maybe we can, like, help ourselves. Like, this, it is this, like, sort of, and then quietly, like, well, I'm not Woodward and Bernstein, so that's fine.
I don't think it's, you know what I think this movie's a love letter to is just. I think there's a kind of guy that we have kind of mythologized now, right? Like in our dad's generations or whatever. Just that, like, a good man who works hard and does good work. And that is the kind of mythology of this to me, is a good, like, a normal man when faced with this, like, overwhelming ethical choice. Most people cave or go the other way so they don't rock the boat. Just this good man who's willing to put in the work and fucking, you know, plant his feet and face the fire. And yeah, to me, that's what they're mythologizing, right? Just the fortitude of the American man.
Yeah.
I think. Which might be bullshit, but again, I think if they had veered toward, like, this, like, stars and stripes, the movie falls apart.
No, and, like, there is no overt patriotism about, like, what an American is or how Americans should act. Like, it is just about, like, it's about the pursuit of truth, which I think is probably more prevalent than anything now, which is why I like watching this movie a lot, because honestly it's just
we,
like,
should care about that more. But, like, even there are certain people that even say, like, this is beyond party, this is beyond campaign, and I feel like now our political system is so reduced to, you know, it's almost like a dodgeball. It's like watching Legends of the Hidden Temple. You're either a blue monkey or a red barracuda. That's
if you like, in the translation of here's the thing, if you think about all those deep throat scenes now, if someone invited you to a garage and you're like, are you going to fuck me or something? Like, I already know all this. Like, I have the internet. Like, why are you bothering me with any of this?
It is one of those movies you're like, man, think about how much easier this movie becomes if they had just had a Kevin McAllister level technology, like a talk boy.
Yeah.
Like, all the times they get off the phone and they're like feverishly typing, and they're like, are these notes good? They say that 25 times. I was like, I can just play notes? It for you. Yeah. Here's the exact audio. Like, now we can just do all that shit. So you forget the fortitude of it.
There's something, before we get out of here, I do want to say there is one thing that, because this movie is also shot by Gordon Willis, who's one of the greatest cinematographers that ever existed. And there's one scene in particular where, like, because again, it's a talking movie. People talk the whole movie. And it's edited very spectacularly. It's shot in a way that gives you a lot of movement. And a lot of, like,
a lot of split diopter,
yeah. There's enough movement in the camera where you're not bored. And again, this movie has, like, just the unrelenting ability.
Flying through the newsroom scenes. Oh, love it.
Unrelenting ability to bore the shit out of you if you're not careful making a movie like this. Like, you can make a really boring movie about a newsroom.
Spotlight. No, there's one other thing we have to talk about before we get... Oh, go ahead.
There's one scene, though, that Gordon Willis gets, like... And it's weird, because I don't think he got nominated for an Oscar for this. When Robert Redford is running out of the parking lot. And it's just that scene where he's running.
Oh, dude, when the paranoia sets in, they're like, fucking with some powerful people.
Yeah, like, that is some fucking... That is...
That is a wonderful section of the movie.
Such a great sequence.
Okay. There was a scene last night that I actually went back and rewatched in the middle of the movie, because I was like, this to me is that, it's one of those magical things where you just see filmmakers capture something and you're like, that is so fucking hard to do, even as it looks simple, right? The ability to maintain tension and the high wire act of that scene, having all this power and dread and not just being a boring, we got to move the plot forward.
Yeah.
So we just talked about Jane Alexander, who won Best Supporting Actress, right?
She got nominated. She didn't win.
Oh, so I just read the list of nominees, not the wins. My fault.
Either way.
Incorrect on my end. That scene when Bernstein goes to their house, and he sees the SIG, and the sister lets him in. And the sister's kind of like fucking burying her sister.
What a fucking bitch of a sister, by the
way. I was like, hey, man, maybe he doesn't need milk. I pay half the rent. He doesn't need milk. No. Just burying that bitch, right? Yeah, that scene is great. If you go back and watch that, the cadence of that scene, the slow build, just little things. Like, she starts in the way they frame her, right? She's kind of sunken in the other room. The staircase is behind her as if it's like a protective cage. Like, I'm not saying anything. She starts moving closer. He starts doing the, like, hey, tell me this, tell me this. I can't tell you anything. I'm not talking. Okay, okay. Takes a sip. He comes back and he's like, but, you know, the money, how much was... We find out later that this ended up being a six-hour conversation that we see like 3 minutes of.
Yeah.
But the tension, the precision of that scene, because this is the moment, right? Of all the moments where this thing could break, this is the moment where they might finally have the keys. They've got a person. You watch this woman struggling with, I'm a normal lady who went to the job. I'm a bookkeeper.
Yeah.
I got a job so I can live in this house with my bitch sister, right? That's all I was doing in life.
Yeah.
And now I am at the fulcrum of one of the greatest scandals in American presidential history. And you watch, and she so beautifully plays the fucking weight and the torment and the torture. And watching Dustin Hoffman play it, right? As if she's like a mystical, like in Indiana, we have a cryptid called a Pukwudgie. They're essentially mischievous little gnomes, right? Like, you had spotted one finally. You spent your whole life looking for it.
Right.
And you're like, I must document it. But if I do, it might run like a Sasquatch, a Samsquatch into the woods. And watching that back and forth, of all the scenes in the movie that are great, that's the one I was like, I have to rewatch this again immediately and keep it fresh in my mind.
Like, it's
if you just want to see, and again, it's just two people sitting in a living room. The magic is when all of the fucking tools of filmmaking come together. I think it's pretty easy to see, like, when Cary Grant's ducking a plane, right, in North by Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
When Luke Skywalker blows up the Death Star, right? When Jaws emerges from the water. There are moments where you're like, it's easy to see why that's magical and intense and crazy.
Yeah.
You know, when Jason is stalking you, it's easy to feel the tension of these moments. That is the one where I was like, these masters of their crafts all came together and took a fucking nothing scene. If I was a film professor, I would give all my students that fucking scene. And I'd say, go out and show me how you would make this scene. Cast it, direct it, shoot it, put some music under it. I wouldn't even tell them what movie it's from. Hopefully they don't cheat, right? You'd know if they did. And just say, how would you fucking shoot this scene? Let them go through that exercise. Then I would show that scene in class and say, that's what you're trying to learn. That's what you're trying to learn. How do you use these tools in these subtle moments to ramp it up to where it's as dramatic a scene as you can find? And to me, that's the calling card of this movie is it's minutiae on minutiae on minutiae.
It's why it works.
Because it's a movie about this fucking enormous historical event, but it never feels that way. I mean,
look, it is a movie that is about, yes, an enormous historical event, but at its core, it's a detective story about two fucking nerds writing a news story.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Aha! Gotcha!
That is some unspectacularly boring shit if you're not Alan Pakula, Gordon Willis, William Goldman, Robert Redford, Dustin Hoffman, Jane Alexander, Jason Robards, and the entire fucking movie.
Turn the entire it into fucking an production.
Absolute thriller. That is all the president's meant.
It is a movie that I feel like I so much more appreciated today.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was telling you, I had this book when I was in college of the 1,000 movies you have to see before you die.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just ripping through them, right? Like, I was doing my little marking them in the book. And it became this exercise. I stopped doing it because I was like, it felt like I was doing homework more than I was like watching them to really like sit in the movie. And that even happens on this pod. I know we've talked about it. Sometimes when we're watching things for the pod, we're not doing our part as an audience. We're not in a handshake agreement with the artist that we're here to enjoy an experience and go on the ride they are. Because all of a sudden we're like, well, that'll be a fucking bit. You know, you're writing shit down. You're like, ah, fuck this guy. Ah. And you're not This movie, so it pulled me into that audience work that I think is very important. I think it's one of the things we talk about this, you know, is cinema dying and movie theaters are dying and this and that. I think the thing that is really hurting cinema is the deal with the artist and the audience, that we are active participants in the story. Because, you know, most of us are on our phones. Most of us are if you're in a movie theater, you're going to the bathroom, or some dickhead's taking pictures or they're talking. It's putting really hard to be an active audience member now. Yeah. Yeah, you know, is that guy fucking a dune bucket?
Is that guy fisting a butthole? Oh, no, that's the popcorn bucket. Never mind.
I mean, I got one, too. I guess I'll try it if we're all doing this. Are we not going to pay attention to the Nun 3? Is that what we've decided? The Nun 3 is not worth our attention? We're going to fuck these buckets? All right. I'll do it.
Fine. Here we go.
Don't tempt me. You know what I mean? Sounds like a fucking Mario Brothers porn in here. It's fine. But I really good movies don't let you be a passive audience member.
Agreed.
In this one, I was so wrapped up in what this movie was. So at the start, when I said it's crushing best. Procedural, I meant it as a loving remark. This is a fucking top flight.
It's the best.
As good as you can make a movie.
It's one of those like five. I think there's a on your Letterboxd account, you can have the four movies that are like your taste, and this is one of mine.
It's awesome. I'm glad we got to. And again, this is what doing Oscar movies in March is for us, man. It's to just celebrate those movies, man. Celebrate the artistry of that scene in that woman's house, right? Mm-hmm. That extra movie thing where there's a lot of movies. I don't know that a vast percentage of them become real art. I think this movie is like a real piece of art.
This is real art.
And I'm not trying to gatekeep and all that shit. Just some movies are just... This is what we talk about, alchemy, right? The stars align and something greater than the sum of its parts comes out. And this has great fucking parts to begin with.
Indeed.
All-timer. This won Best Picture, right?
No.
What beat it?
This year it won... Let's see. It was... See, this was the...
1977?
This is 77. Rocky won.
I fucking love Rocky. I fucking love Rocky.
I'll say this. It's quite
There's no universe where that should have beaten All the President's Men for an Oscar.
This year, though, I'll say this. This is a very hard
year. What was the class?
Okay, it's Rocky, All the President's Men, Bound for Glory, Network, and Taxi Driver. Like, that is tough. That's some
not
tough
you,
business.
Bound for Glory. No, that's fine. Bound for Glory is fine. It's just not in that class.
It's just not in that category.
That's fucking...
That's
like
hard.
Honestly, any of those other four movies winning, you'd be like, yeah.
Yeah, that obviously. Makes sense.
That's pretty rad.
It's one of those things where you're like, wait, I don't a second, know if Taxi I could Driver say that I would have Best Pictures because they were this year.
If I was voting, I don't know. I feel like I would have thrown my vote for Network. I feel like for me it would be Network, All the President's Men, Rocky, Taxi Driver.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's hard. Like that is literally the Which slice of the pizza do I want? They're all good. They're pizza. They're all fucking pizza.
Like, Beatrice Straight won for Network for Best Supporting and beat Jane Alexander.
Yeah. I mean, that, dude, that's, you can't go wrong.
Come on. Like, yeah. I mean.
Some days you walk outside and it's just raining tits and pussy on you. And you're like, wow, how did I get so lucky?
The 77 Oscars were just too good.
You know what we should do? Maybe we'll fucking do this as a TikTok side piece. We should go through and what are the best classes
the
of
best
Picture
Oscar
nominees?
Classes, I'd do that, yeah.
How would that not be a top five best picture nominee class?
Oh, it's got to be.
I'm fascinated.
We're going to talk about this.
Now
we do it on a TikTok. The 70s have got to be the top 10 of all the Oscar classes.
Because if you're doing the best decade of cinema, it's got to be 70s. It's got to be. And I'm a lover of 80s and 90s movies. I mean... 70s though. All right.
Pretty
that's
fucking
it.
Groovy.
We're not just going to sit here and fucking do this all day.
Just
but
crank
I would.
Our popcorn buckets to the 70s.
An amazing film. Guys, I don't know where this will fall in the calendar, right? We're talking about a lot of Oscar movies. The new Oscar movies, because we want to do new movies too, for sure, that we're trying to get to. I think we both kind of agree our favorite of the Oscar class this year is Poor Things. Mm-hmm. We really want to talk about that. Maybe you've already heard that, and I hope you enjoyed it. Also, I think The Boy and the Heron, because, you know, we love Miyazaki and Ghibli, and I think there's a wonderful creator, like a master creator at the end of his life, grappling with that vibe about it. So those two, maybe you've heard them, maybe you haven't. That's what we're working on, and then we'll add another Best Picture nominee to wrap out the curation. We hope you guys enjoyed it. We hope if the Oscars already happened that you had a good time celebrating artists, man. Again, the Oscars, it doesn't matter who gets the trophy. It's a night to fucking remember why we love movies, man. That's how I always sell it to people. Like, who doesn't get choked up watching, you know, a costume designer win a trophy? When does that ever happen? Who doesn't get choked up watching these guys that pull together a short film get to walk up on stage in front of all of those fucking people and accept an award? How can you not be romantic about that?
It's a big deal.
Neither here nor there.
Really big deal.
I fucking love the Oscars. I might be one of the last. Alex, I think, is becoming an Oscar lover too.
I like the Oscars because we've done this enough where I probably can stomach it now. It's still not a thing
that
I
like. You take out the bickering about...
I don't like watching award shows, but I do like watching people give speeches after winning awards.
Oh, it's one of my favorite things to YouTube is just compilations of awards.
Compilations
speeches.
Is quality.
Watching that just overwhelm. Like, we're not athletes. We can't go out and win a Super Bowl and know what that feels like.
It's true.
But hey, we can get a trophy too. I think there's something nice in that. I don't think it degrades other art. Neither here nor there. So guys, Oscar month is in full swing, or it's almost over. Either way, we hope you're enjoying the ride with us. Remember, go to patreon.com/filmalchemistpod to support the show. Remember to follow us on all the socials, including TikTok. The email, filmalchemistpod@gmail.com. If you ever want to reach out, chat us up. Make sure you're leaving 5-star ratings and reviews, and make sure to check out misfitparade.net. Because you'll never see us at the Oscars, but you can see us at misfitparade.net.
Never know.
So we appreciate all the support. We appreciate all of the time. We love talking movies with our friends here on the Film Alchemist Pod.